Hello there. Welcome. This is Amy Barnhart, co-founder of StrongMarriageNow.com, and I'm here with Dr. Dana. Hey, everybody. How's it going today, Dana? How's it going, everybody on the phone? We are so happy to be kicking off our new Strong Marriage Now membership with this monthly call. Each month, as a part of this special membership that we're kicking off, we're going to be holding a call just like this one, where we're going to share a topic of the month for around 15 minutes. And after that, you're going to get to talk to Dr. Dana personally and ask your question. The call is going to be scheduled to last around an hour today, and I especially want to thank all of you who are on our first membership call today. You are here because you either entered in a story in our story contest, and thank you very much for doing that, or you're a valued client of StrongMarriageNow.com, and we very much appreciate you. This month's topic is called From Holiday Stress to Holiday Bliss, but what it's really about is how to change your attitude in any situation to give you a happier, more positive outlook on life. We're going to try out a new conversational format to share the topic of the month, so bear with us and let us know what you think after the call. After we go through the topic of the month, you're going to have an opportunity to talk to Dr. Dana, get your questions answered. This doesn't have to relate to the topic of the month. It can be any relationship question that's on your mind. And what we're going to do is Dr. Dana is going to spend between 3 to 5 minutes per question, and unfortunately not a lot longer than that because we want to get to as many people as possible on the call. And we know some of these are going to be really tough questions, and it's going to be really hard to cover it in 3 to 5 minutes and be hard to fully answer them. But please understand that we're doing that so we can manage our time so we can serve as many of you as we can. So to help Dr. Dana help you, please dive right in and ask your question when it's your turn. We know you have really important stories, but unfortunately we don't have a ton of time for background information, so please feel free to just get right to the point and ask your question when it's your turn. So to let you know how this is going to work to be able to ask your question, what you can do is you can do what's called raising your hand and get in line to ask your question, and you'll do that by pressing *2 on your phone. Or you can use the monthly call event page that I emailed to you if you RSVP'd. So if you sent an RSVP, you got an email from me that said, thank you for your RSVP. And in that, there's a link where you can click to a page and ask your question online. So that's how that works. If you don't have that page and you're not comfortable having your voice heard online, you can email us your question at support@strongmarriagenow.com. So when it's your turn, I'll let you know by identifying you by the last 4 digits of your phone number, because we don't exactly know your name if you're just dialing in. And if you have a blocked number, if you can, please unblock it. Otherwise, it might be hard for you to know that I'm unmuting you and it's your turn. But we will make this work. And when it's your turn, please let us know your first name and your question once you're unmuted. So, Dana, I want to hand it over to you now.
Oh, thanks. Hey, everybody. This is Dr. Dana, just so you can recognize my voice. One last thing before we get started, actually a couple things. First, I wanted to let you know that this is being recorded and that it will be available for other people to listen to. And, in fact, once people join the membership program, they'll be able to listen to these recordings. So if you don't want your personal information out there and you don't, you know, want names and places and towns, you might want to keep that out of your question because this is being recorded and other people will be listening to it. The other thing I need to do is, as always, my quick disclaimer, which basically I wanted to make sure that you all know that by being on this call, you're agreeing to the terms of service, which basically says that I am not agreeing to be your therapist, and this isn't one-on-one counseling. Basically, I'm just going to give you some really important information and steps that you can take to have a happier relationship. That's what this is, okay? So let's get started on the topic. Dive right in here. Our topic is from holiday stress to holiday bliss, but really, what does that mean, actually? You know, it means, and you guys have probably figured some of this out, that how do you make your holidays not stressful? How do you make them awful or not awful? How do you make them wonderful and fabulous and all the things that you see in the movies and the commercials and all that? You know, how do you make your holidays that? And basically, it boils down to, hate to break it to you, your attitude. It's all about kind of what we choose to focus on, what we choose to pay attention to, what we choose to really decide to have a good time, or whether we decide to focus on the crowds and focus on the stress and focus on the money and focus on all that. And honestly, as much as this is not a popular notion, I teach people all the time that that is a choice. What we choose to pay attention to is up to us in every situation, whether that's the holidays or whether that's a family interaction, whether that's hanging out with your in-laws or dealing with your kids. What we choose to pay attention to is going to decide the mood that we're in. I always tell people the example that, you know, I can go outside right now and I can see the telephone wires and I can smell the smog and I can look at the pavement, and that's all real and true, but I can also go outside and I can see the sunshine and the beautiful flowers and hear the birds sing. Both of those things are out there all the time. What I choose to pay attention to is up to me. And that's kind of the message that we wanted to get across to the holidays. So it's funny that actually this topic got brought up, because Amy was just telling me this morning, and I asked her on this call if she would share a story that happened to her over the weekend. So, Amy, can you give an example of kind of what we just talked about?
Sure. I'd love to hear this. I'd love to tell this story. So just to give you a little background, over the Thanksgiving holiday, I'm actually working on losing weight and doing Weight Watchers.
Aren't we all?
And so Thanksgiving was just a smidge stressful for me, thinking that, oh, I'm going to, you know, all this hard work I've been doing to peel off the pounds, I'm going to pile them right back on. And so one way I was going to do that was by going with a big hike with the family up in the mountains and really enjoy the outdoors and burn some extra calories before the big meal. So we're off on our hike, and we're having a great time, and the dogs are romping, and it's wonderful. And unfortunately, though, about 15 minutes in, my son, Jack, felt really nauseous and was just really suffering. And so we needed to turn back, and I was bummed out. I was disappointed. Of course, I did the right thing as his mom, but I was like, oh, what am I going to do? I really wanted to get this workout in. And so anyway, based on what I learned from Dana and the Strong Marriage Now principles, I chose to have a good attitude. I had remembered Dr. Dana's little voice in my head, your mood is your choice. And I reminded myself to choose to let my disappointment go and choose to enjoy that special time with my son, just the two of us.
Aww.
And what ended up being really nice is here I have this 12-year-old preteen video game addicted little guy who's fabulous, but I don't often get a chance to really bond with him, and we actually ended up being able to walk arm in arm back down to the bottom of the trail, and it was really special because he's going to be like taller than me before you know it and off to college, and it was really nice to have that special time. And so just choosing to let that go and was really great. So I appreciate Dr. Dana's lesson in that.
I love that story. I love it when it actually works and people actually apply those principles. But, you know, people tell me all the time, Amy, and well, they ask me all the time, really, is, but how do you do that? Really? People, you know, honestly, they do kind of feel like a victim of the world around them. They feel like the world happens to them. And not that they're in control of what's going on around them. So, again, you know, how did you access that? How did you get to that place that you were able to turn that around?
Well, one of the things I apply all the time in my marriage is the stuff from the time together section. And in particular in the plan the time section of the Strong Marriage Now system, Dr. Dana makes a point specifically about your mood is your choice. You can choose to have a good attitude, choose to roll with things, choose to have fun. So I really embrace that. I have to work pretty hard on that. I think we probably all do. So I try and really focus on that no matter what happens. The other thing is I have a really good friend, Mark, who told me last spring when I was kind of bellyaching about something that was bothering me, and he said, well, hey, Amy, how is that perfect for you? And I was like, what? Are you kidding? It's not perfect. I'm cranky. Like, I'm upset. Like, let me be upset. And he's like, no, really. How is that perfect for you? And it was, you know, initially I was not happy with him asking me that question, but I kind of really started to embrace, like, asking myself that question got me into the place that my mood is my choice and how I look at it as my choice. So it's something that I work on daily anytime anything kind of bothers me. So that's what I do. And the really cool thing I wanted to share with you guys is that recently, on a recent date night, my husband and I were chatting, and he said, you know, Amy, over the last few months, your attitude has been more positive, and you just seem to be able to roll with things, and things just slide off your back and you don't get too hung up. And he asked me, well, how are you able to do that? And I explained this whole how is this perfect question to him. And he started laughing about it kind of the same way I initially did when it was first presented to me. But it turns out that, you know, we recently were on a vacation and, you know, we got stuck in traffic. And he's like, how is this perfect? And we're laughing instead of being upset about our 400-mile journey being extended by this giant snarl of traffic. So he's actually using it more and more. So I highly recommend that question
That's awesome. And, yeah. And you know why, too? I always tell people that, you know, people in a marriage very much want to tell their spouse how they ought to be. They want to tell their spouse how they should change and tell their spouse what would make them happier and better. And, it, you know, honestly, it just doesn't work. And, in fact, most times it makes your spouse dig in their heels more and stay the way they are and not learn a new behavior, excuse me, new behavior, because it's, you know, it's kind of insulting. It's sort of like saying, I know better. I know better than you how you're supposed to be. I know better than you that, you know, what will make you happy. And people just don't like to hear that, even for me, honestly. People just don't, you know, they don't really want to be told how they can change and do something differently. So, you know, one of the things we're always talking about with the system is that, it, you know, just one spouse can use it and it can really make a big difference. And that's kind of the example that you're giving, though, Amy, is that, like, just by showing him, just by living this new way, walking the walk, as it were, he noticed.
Right.
Noticed,
yeah.
And if you had said, you know, Kevin, you really ought to start doing this, then
yeah.
That would not have gone over very well. But to start, like, just acting that way and choosing to pay attention, he starts to notice, and then he comes to you and says, what are you doing? Why are you happier? What's going on? And, you know, in other words, I want to know this secret. And then starts to apply it himself. So that's one of a primary skill in making your marriage better is being the way that you want your spouse to be. If you want your spouse to be working on their attitude, then you work on your attitude. If you want your spouse to be more loving, then you're more loving. If you want your spouse to be calmer or whatever it is, showing that and living that and then allowing your spouse to see the positive results of that shift, they will come to you. Believe it or not, they will come to you and say, what's going on? Why is this working? Why is our family happier? Why are you happier? What, mm-hmm. you know, what do you know that I don't know? And it, you know, it works really a lot. So, that's one of the things I recommend for couples in general.
That is awesome. Thank you, Dana. But sometimes it's really hard, though. I mean, it's especially if you got something really painful going on. You know, I know sometimes I'm worrying about things, and it's just, you know, my mind just turns and turns and turns on a particular issue. So what would you say, you know, for someone who has that kind of situation?
I actually call that the anxiety train, believe it or not. And what I mean by that is that, you know, the anxiety, the worry pulls up in front of you. And what most people do is they get on the train and then they battle themselves. You should worry about that. No, you shouldn't worry about that. It'll be fine. No, it won't be fine. It'll be, you know, and people go back and forth and back and forth. And that actually increases their anxiety and the things that they're worrying about. So, honestly, one of the ways I tell people is to, I tell them never, just don't get on the train. So, you know, the anxiety comes up, and instead of getting on the train and having that debate, you just sort of, I call it, take a right turn in your head and think about literally something else. I have to get bananas. I'm out of milk. I wonder if we have any eggs. I mean, literally, don't even engage in the battle of worry about it, don't worry about it, worry about it, don't worry about it. Just get off the topic altogether. And I tell a joke always that this has become, you know, I had to struggle with this for years, as, of course, myself, and this has become so second nature to me now that sometimes a worry will come up, and I'll take a right turn and start thinking about the latest movie I saw or the latest book I read, which is the two things that work best for me. And I'll have to go back and go, no. I, like, for instance, who's going to pick up my kids today? And I'll go, and then I'll think, okay, so Johnny Depp was doing this, and then he was doing it. And I think, no, wait, you actually have to go back. Think about that. That's a real question you have to have. I've gotten so good at getting off the anxiety train that I almost have to force myself sometimes to go back and worry about things that do need to be worried about. But, you know, I tell people, I've got clients who list off all the major football teams and the towns they're from, and, you know, different things work. Song lyrics work for some people, but people discover their way to take a right turn, their way to get off that worry and anxiety and not even engage in that battle in the first place. And that really does speak to one's mood, because people don't realize that underlying anxiety and fear really, really is almost, I don't want to say always, but is one of the primary sources of a bad, quote-unquote, mood, of a dark space, or people that are snapping or agitated or angry. You know, they're scared a lot of the times. And if you can get off those anxieties, it can really helps you control those good moods and choose to pay attention. So to bring it back to the holidays and to wrap things up before we answer some questions, kind of getting in touch with, what might be scaring you, what might be your anxieties, what might be affecting your mood, and then getting off of those. Remembering always that you have a choice, like I mentioned before, to pay attention to the clouds and the leaves and the flowers, or you have a choice to pay attention to the telephone wires and the smog. But again, that's your choice. We're not a victim of those things. And I know that sounds harsh to some people, but we're really not. And then I love Amy's suggestion as well, to ask yourself, how is this perfect? To ask yourself in all things, if things go sideways, if things go, and I want to share a real quick example of that in, directly related to the holidays. And the other day I got my Christmas decorations all out. I started decorating my house a little early this year, and one of the boxes, I have 30 boxes of Christmas, and one of the boxes had broken open and water had gotten inside. And of the 30 boxes of Christmas, this was the one box that had all of my Christmas ornaments in it, all of my ornaments from my childhood, from raising my sons, from the last, you know, 17 years of my marriage. I was devastated. And I got very teary and very upset because those things are very kind of important to me and all those memories. And I had to, you know, through my kind of teary, I had to say to myself, how is this perfect? I had a hard time with it. I couldn't find it. Couldn't figure out how this was perfect. Couldn't figure out how this was going to help me. And, you know, I came out of my room, basically, and my two little boys and my husband and my mom were all sitting around the table with paper towels and talking about each ornament. And they were cleaning them, and they were laughing about them, and they were saving them for me. And they were trying to make sure I was okay and trying to make sure that it was going to be perfect. And, you know, there were candles lit. There was a fire in the fireplace.
So sweet.
And then my son said, you know, let's go to Michael's and let's make Mama some more ornaments. And it was so touching. And I got it. Like, this somehow was perfect. This was a moment. This was something we were all going to remember. And yeah, we lost a few ornaments. But really, in the grand scheme of things, that moment was so much more powerful and impactful. So I figured out the answer, how that was perfect for me. Basically. So,
that's wonderful.
Thank you. Sure.
Thank
so
you.
Anyway, I want to encourage everybody to just choose to take your holidays from the holiday stress to the holiday bliss. And yes, I said choose to do that. And I really hope you all kind of have a great holiday season. Thank you so much. So,
okay. So now we're going to transition this call to taking your questions. And just to remind you how to do that, you can raise your hand on the phone. I see a couple of you have already done that. Thank you very much. We'll be getting to you very shortly. You just raise your hand on the phone by pressing *2. And I noticed there's several people who have called in on the webcast as well. So the way you'll ask your question on the webcast is just enter in. There's an ask a question box to the left. And if you don't see the box, just click the little button there and you'll be able to ask your question. And if that doesn't work for you, please feel free to email us a question at support@strongmarriagenow.com. So you can use any one of those techniques, and really look forward to answering your, getting to your questions. So I am going to unmute the call ending in 3043. And when I do that, please, I haven't done it quite yet, please just state your name and ask your question. So 3043, you are now unmuted.
Hi, I'm Kathleen. Dr. Dana, thanks so much for taking my call. I'm really interested in something that happens on all holidays, not just this one. It's relative to gift-giving. One of the things that I find is that I really enjoy a gift that has thought in it, and my husband enjoys them that has something in it for him, like a TV or a, you know, season tickets to a ball club, something like that. And
are those presents that he gives to you, or presents that he would like to give, that he would like you to give to him?
Well, what he does is he buys them for us. So us.
Got it.
And so that's not very interesting to me. And I would like something that was more thoughtful. And so I've tried my ways. I'd love some help from you.
Well, I have a couple different thoughts about that. One is to give your husband a bit of a break. I don't want to make general statements, but there are many people, oftentimes men, but there are many people who just, they have almost a deer in the headlights feeling about gift giving. They feel like they're not going to get the right one. They're not going to get the one you want. They don't know, you know, how to figure that out. And so they just sort of become paralyzed. And oftentimes they either don't give anything or they default to the present that would make them feel good. So a lot of times it's not so much that they think of the great gift for you, or that they remember that they're supposed to think of that, and then they just think, no, I'm going to get something for me. A lot of times they just literally, they go blank. And they panic, basically. And they think to themselves, well, what would make me happy? Well, if it would make me happy, it would probably make us happy. And, you know, and then sometimes they default to the present that really is, what's the old joke, the football for Christmas for grandma. You know, that's not exactly what she wants. The other thing, too, is sometimes we set them up a little bit. Sometimes we expect them to be able to do a skill that maybe we have, a skill like figuring out what somebody would want, a skill of noticing things, paying attention, listening to clues that may not be in their skill set. I say all the time that, you know, most of us didn't marry jerks, so if they're doing something that we think is kind of jerky behavior, chances are they don't know what else to do, you know. So, and then, you know, my third point about all that is sometimes we say these general things like, I want a present that's really thoughtful, and we know what that means, but they don't know what that means. So we kind of assume that they have our, you know, our understanding and our way of communicating and our way of getting to that information, when in fact, they don't. So again, that kind of leads back all the way around to my deer in the headlights example, and so they just sort of default to that. Because again, I say, chances are that the person you're married to is a very nice person who loves you, and if he's not getting it, then he's not getting it. Like, I'm wondering what he's missing and how maybe you could explain that to him or teach him or show him or offer him a list or something like that that would help him get to that place. Does that answer any of your questions, or do you have further questions about that?
Well, I do. I have a further question about that.
Go ahead.
So, if I have then, I've got an option then, so if I need to give it to him in a different way, that information, mm-hmm. what's a good place to start?
Well, a good place to start is from a loving place, of course, is the first thing. It's sort of coming from an assumption of, I know you love me, I know you're a good man, I know you want to make me happy, so then let me tell you how to do that. Versus, I think you're selfish, I think you're self-serving, I think you're not paying attention to me. That tends to shut people down. So the first place I would say is come from an assumption of love, an assumption of goodness and kindness from this man. And, you know, again, even if you're not necessarily feeling that to your core, if you can present that, if you can get to a place of, look, I know that you want to make me happy. Of course you want to make me happy. You love me. I get that. So that would be the first thing. And so let me share to you what matters to me. Let me share what would make me happy. Let me share a way to figure out what I'm into at any given time. Like, in other words, teaching him the skill that he probably doesn't have, but from a place not like, you know, comma, let me teach you this, comma, you moron, but let me teach you this because I'm sure that you want this information. And they tend to be far more receptive to hearing it at that point.
So is it better to say it out loud, or is it better to put it maybe in writing? Is there any safer way to make that happen?
I would say I'm always a big fan of the in-person saying thing if we can really get to a sincere place with our tone. If our tone is going to be saying the right words, but it's kind of, you know, sounding, look, I know you love me, but, you know, then then I would go with the writing. My only concern about writing sometimes is that people can interpret their own tone of voice in it. So even if you aren't being attacking, he might feel you're being attacking if that's what that's where he's assuming that you're going to go. But, you know, I love the tone of voice. If you can really, I mean, I like the person-to-person, if you can really get your head wrapped around that this is, you know, again, somebody who loves you, somebody who wants to make you happy and really come from that sincere place, I think he'd be pretty receptive.
Excellent. Thank you.
Awesome. So I think that's about the time we have
sorry.
For this particular call. That was great. Thank you, guys.
Thank
and just
you so
to remind
much.
Those of you who are on the call, just press *2 to raise your hand to ask a question and get in line to be able to speak directly to Dr. Dana. And if you're listening to the webcast, just enter in your question on that webcast form, or you can shoot us an email at support@strongmarriagenow.com. So next we're going to go to the call ending in 0094. I'm going to unmute you now, and please just state your name and your question. And thank you very much, Kathleen. So
hi.
Caller 0094, can you start?
Hi, my name is Christy.
Hi, Christy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been married for 12 years, and I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. And my husband and I have been having problems for 3 years now, and he kind of wouldn't admit that anything was wrong until about a year and a half ago. And about 6 months ago, he admitted that he's been having an affair for 2 years. And we have been through all grades of counseling, and now he pretty much says he's basically done. He wants to leave us. And I've been begging him to stay and to end the relationship with her and to give us a year, but he says that he doesn't think that he can get the feelings back for me and that he can't get over her. And so I kind of don't know what to do now.
Well, you know, again, I appreciate and respect your ability to hang in there, really, and to keep fighting and keep trying for your marriage and to protect your family. I think that's awesome. It is really difficult, and I don't know what has been explained to him in therapy or not in therapy. And, you know, there are so many reasons to stay in a marriage and so many reasons to keep your family together and you know, so many problems that are going to occur in the other relationship. And the problem is he probably can't hear that from you. You know, I'm always hesitant on these phone calls. I don't want to be selling anybody anything. I feel uncomfortable. I just want to be able to offer you information. But I do feel like in this particular instance, I have to tell you that, you know, we have something called checked out partner, basically. And I don't know if you took a look at that, but checked out partner is basically a video of me kind of explaining all the reasons why it's a bad idea to get divorced, all the reasons why all the problems are going to happen again.
I've seen that one, yeah.
Have you seen that? Has he seen it?
He was listening to it. He was working, but he could hear it. So.
Okay. Again, I would kind of approach, and I think I coach you in that program basically to sit down and say, I realize that you want to go, and I understand that, but all I want is, you know, 5 minutes of your time. I want 5 minutes of your time for you to watch this and listen to this and consider it. Because in that, I explain basically that any marriage can be saved. Any marriage can be made better again. So he's incorrect. And one of the things I want to explain, and I think I explain in there as well, is so often when people are considering leaving their spouse for somebody else, they think they're going to they're making a choice between how their marriage is right now compared to what that other person has to offer or what that relationship feels like. And, of course, that's just brand new, and it's make-believe and it's fantasy and it's based on an affair. And I try and tell people, no, what I'm asking you to choose is based on what that relationship is and will become, like every other relationship, based on how good your marriage could be. And if you could get that thought across, if you could get to a place, you know. And, again, at the same time after that, you know, if we can get him to listen to that, if we can get him to pay attention to that, I would really recommend that. Or get somebody, a therapist or somebody, to explain it to him. After that, and, you know, again, because I don't know if I'll have another opportunity to talk to you, as painful as that sounds, I just also need to tell you that there is, and I'm sorry to have to say this, there is a right way and a wrong way to get a divorce. And by that I mean for the kids. All of the research suggests that all of the damage that we always hear about from divorced children, that, you know, 99% of that is caused by a contentious divorce, by a divorce where people are fighting, they don't get along, one spouse hates the other spouse. And, of course, affairs really create that scenario. You're so hurt so angry and so betrayed that it creates a situation where you just want to hate this person for the rest of your life. And I would just recommend that if, in fact, he can't come around. He won't. Let's be honest. He won't come around. He won't do the right thing. I really, really recommend that you get to a place, whether that be in therapy or however you need to get there, prayer, or however, you know, you get to your place where you're not going to create a situation where you hate this man, because that will affect your children.
Yeah.
So I know that's not great. You know, that's not great news. I hope that he chooses the first option, right, and fixes your marriage and stays happy. But if in fact he can't, trying to get to a place where you guys can have an amicable, at least, I don't want to say friendly, you're not going to be, you know, but at least an okay place to deal with each other, then it won't affect your children very much at all. So that's kind of what the advice I want to give you, just in case I don't get a chance to talk to you again.
And Christy, this is Amy here. Have you seen the 7 Steps to Survive an Affair video that we have on the site?
I'm not sure if I've seen that one or not. I do have the Strong Marriage Now system.
Okay, if you wouldn't mind, if you could just send me your email, I'll send you a link to that, because Dr. Dana walks through the 7 steps of, you know, specifically what you need to do to recover from an affair, and that might be something that would be helpful to you and potentially, you know, another good thing for him to watch as well, if you can.
Is that a blog article, Amy?
It's on the blog.
Okay.
Yeah, I can. And actually, I think we attached it to the recent Demi Moore Ashton Kutcher article. If you scroll to the bottom of that one, you'll see the video right there. It's about 5 minutes long, and it does walk you through the 7 steps. So that may be helpful as well.
Okay. Yeah, I've got that pulled up to watch tonight.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry you're going through this, hon. This is a really tough time.
And I can tell you that with our recent story contest, just to give you hope, I mean, there are like a few of the stories that came in from the story contest were people who had affairs and got past them by applying the lessons. And, you know, of course, initially, I mean, some of them initially just the one spouse applied the lessons and then the other spouse noticed. And, you know, one of the other ones, they both applied it at the same time. But it can work. It's a tough road. There's no question that it's a really tough, painful road, but it really can work. And there's been, you know, several examples of people who have survived and are even thriving now. I mean, one woman said, we're laughing together, we're playing together, we're touching each other. It's beautiful. So it really can happen. So I encourage you to continue to learn the skills.
Well, I hope so, because he's spending every night in a hotel now. He comes home in the morning and takes our daughter to school and then comes home at night for supper and then goes to a hotel every night.
Oh, yeah, that's tough, huh?
That's really hard.
So hopefully you can get him to watch that, and then if not, then, you know, hopefully you can get to a place where you can find some peace about that.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Christy. Okay. I appreciate you dialing in.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sorry, Christy. I accidentally cut you off. There you go.
Right.
Thank you. Okay, folks. We're going to take a call, a question from the email right now. And I just want to remind everybody, if you want to ask your question, what you can do is press *2 to ask your question. And that will raise your hand. You'll be able to talk to Dr. Dana, or you can email us at support@strongmarriagenow.com. Or you can enter in your question on the webcast form if you're one of those asking a question via the webcast. So here I'm going to read one of the questions from the webcast right now. And this is from Susie. It says, my husband is often overwhelmed by all the extra love and caring that comes with the holidays and withdraws. And I'm just the opposite. Aside from leaving him at home all season, how can we both stay off the anxiety train but still enjoy our friends and family? He always enjoys himself once he goes, but he never seems to remember that he actually does have fun once he's there. So, Dana, can you help Susie?
Absolutely. My question is, I would want to know what is it that's scaring him? Again, what is it that specifically he feels is bothering him about that situation? Is it the social pressure? Is it that he's exhausted? Is it that he feels he has to be somebody that he's not? I would want to know and find out kind of what is it that's going on for him that he is going on for him that he is resistant to this. Because a lot of times in a relationship, we assume that we know why somebody's doing something because it would be the reason we would be doing that if we were doing that. I know that sounded complicated, but in other words, we think that their explanation is the explanation that it would be if we were doing it. And we're often not right. You know, everybody's different, of course. Everybody's got their own stuff going on and their own histories, their own baggage, their own pain. And so I would be curious to know, really, what is it that's going on? And once you found that out, I would also want to know what would make that better? What could be done about that besides staying home? Or, you know, where's the compromise in that? What would it help if we stayed a little bit less time? Would it help if we went to parties that were smaller groups? Would it help if we went to parties with another couple who we know very well so it didn't feel like a cold social situation? In other words, figuring out what the source is of that fear and what the source is of that anxiety would help come up with a solution. So that would be my the first point in that. And then the second thing about that is, you know, we are all different. Sometimes introverts marry extroverts, and neither one of those is wrong. And then we hope to come up with some kind of compromise. So it may be that if we can't figure out or we try all the things that will make those situations better, then there may be some sort of compromise in that. There may be that maybe our caller's name was Susie, correct? Yeah, maybe Susie, you do go to some functions, let's say a quarter of the functions by yourself, a quarter of the functions you choose not to go to and stay home with your husband, and maybe he can meet you halfway and go to half of the functions. So there may be some compromise in that. Compromise, of course, being that we come to a mutually acceptable solution, not necessarily that we meet somewhere halfway. It may be that his mutually acceptable solution is to come a little bit further or that yours might be to go the other direction. So I would want to know what's going on, what's really going on and getting in his way, what would help with that. And by the way, I would recommend when you're having this conversation to do, I'm not sure, Susie, if you have the listening exercise or access to the listening exercise from the Strong Marriage Now system. But in that, I explain that the best way to do this is to simply ask questions, not even to offer suggestions. Well, could it be this or could it be that? Not even do that. Like, what's going on? What's this feel like? What do you need? Where is this coming from? I joke, it sounds kind of a lot like a therapist, if you've ever been in therapy. How does that make you feel? All those kind of cheesy therapy questions. But really allowing that person to kind of open up without any judgment on your part or any, and don't even try and fix it in that conversation. In the exploring conversation, don't go, if he says, I'm just pulling this out of the air, I don't like going to parties with a bunch of people I don't know. It's too much work, and I feel, you know, overwhelmed, and that makes me uncomfortable. So don't launch right into, well, then we'll only go to this, or, but you do know so-and-so, or don't fix it at the time. Don't talk him out of whatever it is he's trying to explain. Just at that point, listen. Like, okay, all right, I hear that, I understand that, I know, you know, that's not the same as agreeing, by the way. We always point out listening is not the same as agreeing or acquiescing or giving in. It's just listening. So I would, at that point, I would just kind of spend some time listening. And then later on, maybe in a whole other separate conversation, start brainstorming about some solutions and include him in those solutions. So that would be kind of the way that I would attack that basically for the holidays. So I hope that answers your question.
Excellent. And Susie, if that didn't answer your question, I know so you asked a question via the webcast. Feel free to submit another one if you have some follow-on questions for Dana. So just to remind those of you on the call, we still have lots of time left for questions, and I see some more hands raised, so we'll be getting to you shortly. Just for anybody else who's listening in, you can press *2 to raise your hand to ask the question, and we will identify you by the last 4 digits of your phone number. And you can also, if you're listening in the webcast, do like Susie did and ask the question on the Q&A form on that webcast page, or you can send us an email at support@strongmarriagenow.com. So now we're going to go to the caller ending in 3972. Would you please let us know your name and your question?
Yeah, my name is Nancy, and I was married 27 years, and my husband and I got into an argument. We'd had the last couple years kind of bad. I went to Nice, and we remodeled, a huge remodel and everything. Mm. My husband decided he wanted a divorce. And I did try everything. I tried begging and pleading. I mean, I bought the system. He watched it for just like a minute, and then that was it. And because he decided he wanted divorce, But someone gave him the book Spiritual Divorce. And so he thought we would be best friends, you know, and we could sit down for holiday meals, and it would work out, you know. And he talked to his parents before, you know, without me, and saying, Nancy still wants to be involved in the family and still invite her and it'll be okay. And our friends, we watch Oregon UVO games. They said, well, we were just going to invite you guys and then you guys can figure out who comes. And he called me and goes, I told him it would be okay if we both came. Bullshit.
Wow. He is in denial, man. Yeah.
He's already started going out with somebody. He left me, even though we had a hard year or two, and both my kids now are in college, and one came home this summer, and he told us he's gay, and I mean, we had a lot. We did like a $200,000 remodel on my house, and but because he decided he wants it, and he is so flippin' mean. I mean, he says he has endured more than any man should have to in 26 out of 27 years. You know, he doesn't love me. I mean, just everything. And I can't talk to him. It is so painful. I mean, I still love him and I would still give him a chance. I don't trust him now. So I guess it wouldn't, I know it wouldn't work. I've only come to the realization that I could live without him. I didn't want to, but I can. And now it's becoming an ugly thing because he has a business and he makes a lot more than I do and he thinks he doesn't owe me shit. And so now it is down to money.
Well,
and
yeah,
so he told his family that I'm after money, and I've been really exiled from the family. It's very lonely for me.
I'm so sorry, Nancy. My question to you is going to be, what kind of support system do you have? What kind of friends, family?
I have friends. I don't have family. It's all my husband's family, and I have two sons in college now.
And as far as you've been saying that you've been kicked out of his family, instead of, are you sure?
Have
you tried to contact them?
I have emailed my mother-in-law. a couple times, and she, this summer she said, "Oh, we've been busy, Nancy." And the week before Thanksgiving was really hard on me. I didn't think it was going to be that hard. And I called and I left a message, and I said, "I miss the family. I feel really lonely. I feel like I've been exiled just because Randy wants a divorce." I said, "No, Van, that's my mother-in-law's name. If I was a stranger and I was reaching out for help, you would help me. But I feel like I've been asking since the summer, and I've gotten no support."
Did you didn't get a response from her?
On my answer machine, was, "Oh, Nance, just call them to see if they're feeling better."
Right. You know, it's similar to, I'm not sure if you've ever experienced
well,
that.
Well, I emailed her back, and I said, I can't beg anymore. I said, "I won't beg again. Take care." I mean, friends have said they're gone, Nancy.
Well, that's not often the case, but sometimes that is the case. Sometimes people just don't know how to handle it, and they get very uncomfortable, and so they sort of retreat. Not because they don't have feelings for you and they don't love you after this many years, but because they're kind of confused and lost and don't know how to behave and don't know what the right way to act is, and they feel that if they have a relationship with you, then they're going to not be supportive of their son, and so they just tend to back off and ignore the situation and put their heads in the sand. In general, that tends to get better after the divorce, interestingly enough, after it's over, after it's when the whole thing is. So, again, if you do care about these people and you do want them in your life, I would try to give that connection another shot.
I gave it several times, yeah.
Aren't you in the midst of the divorce still, though?
Oh, yeah. I told my lawyer, she can drag it out now. He wouldn't talk to me for 5 months. He was so mean. He would leave messages and say, I listen to your messages for 3 seconds, but they all sound the same, so I just delete them.
Okay, and I understand. I'm going to tell you the same thing that I told our previous caller, and that is, again, I recognize that this sucks, that this is the worst, one of the worst things we can go through. In fact, they say that divorce is the second most painful thing we go to, second to loss of a child. I mean, it's an incredibly painful time. I will tell you this, however, we do come out on the other side. There will be a point where you wake up in the morning and it's not the first thing you think about. There will be a point in your life when, in fact, you don't have these kind of angry, hurt feelings toward him, again, if you choose to. And while I do understand that you have grown children, and it does make a difference, interestingly enough, even in their lives. I realize that your kids are in college, but it does make a difference at the weddings, at the birth of their children, at the who are we going to spend Christmas time with. It does still make a difference in their adult lives. So, again, I know you're just in the midst of it, and you're just experiencing this stuff, so I'm not saying, you know, I'm not in any way implying, like, get over it, you should be happy, but eventually getting to a place. Go ahead.
Yeah, my friends have been, like, super supportive, but, you know, the other week before the holidays, I was so depressed, and my friend called me up, and she said, "Nancy, okay, there is more to life than just Randy. You can't keep saying this. When everybody's saying, oh, my God, I wish I could help her, I mean, mm-hmm. you got to snap out of it." And I did go to the doctor, and I, you know, got a little meds to make the first impression. But I feel now his family, they heard that he's dating somebody. I think his mom said you shouldn't date until you're divorced. I know he's still dating or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I said drag it out to my lawyer. I don't care. He put me in pain for 5 months where he wouldn't even talk to me. He was so mean to me. I mean, he wouldn't treat a dog that bad as he treated me.
I understand, honey, but that was because he was trying to end the relationship. And I'm not asking you at this point to forgive him. I'm not asking you to get to a place where you are in any way friendly. I am asking you for your own sake, and I understand what your friends are saying. You know, we quote in our series, Maya Angelou has a very famous quote that says, "Resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die." Meaning, again, I know you're hurt. I know you're angry. I know he was really awful to you, but if you choose to hang on to this and hang on to this for much longer and for much, you know, and for on into your life, it's going to hurt you, honey, not him. So you dragging
well,
this on
I'm
and you getting
better.
To places. I'm sorry?
But I think I'm actually getting better. And now he wants to hurry up and go off his life. He's living with his brother. I mean, his business has to be evaluated. He's full of shit. And so
well,
I don't
yes.
care enough because I have the house. It's lonely there, but I'm going to live there. And
I get that you
say that.
Right. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Nancy, I think we're out of time, so we need to make time for other callers, and my
yeah,
heart goes out to you.
But
so
I encourage you, though, Nancy. I really do encourage you. Thank you, Amy. I'll wrap up. But I really do encourage you to take a good hard look at whether you feel like you're truly moving on from this or whether you feel like kind of stretching it out and hanging it on is really going to keep making you happy or not. So that's kind of what I want to do as I wrap up. So thank you, Amy, for giving us that
time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you so much for dialing in, Nancy.
Thanks.
And thanks for your question.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so for those of you that are on the call, we still have time for questions, so please dial *2 to raise your hand, or if you're on the webcast, as I said, type in your question on the form or shoot us an email at support@strongmarriagenow.com. So the next question that I have here is one that's come in via the webcast, and it is from Cindy, who says, I'm enjoying the call, but this is such a personal question, so I felt more comfortable emailing it. So
I understand.
Yeah, I do not find my body sexy, but my husband seems to think it is. I feel nothing like the beautiful women I see in magazines. How can he find my older, very average body sexy?
Aww. Wow. Well, you know, speaking of from a 40-something person myself, I completely understand where you're coming from. You know, honestly, as silly as it sounds, men aren't lying when they say it doesn't have a lot to do with how we look. Honestly, one of the things I talk about is men get a really bad rap when it comes to what sex is about for them. Many people believe, and women especially believe, that it's about, at the risk of being crude, sort of getting off. It's about, you know, having sex for them, basically, and having the release. And in all honesty, that's not what it's about for most men. It's about connection, believe it or not. It's about feeling close to somebody. Sex for a man makes them feel loved, respected, intimate in the sense of emotional intimacy. It really isn't about getting off. I hate to be crude, but they can do that on their own. It's not about that. It's about actually being with the person that they love. So society gives men a real bad rap about that, and women constantly misunderstand it. And so if Cindy's coming from a place of feeling like she's got to look a certain way in order for that to be a satisfying experience for him, or she has to look a certain way in order for him to want to be with her, or he must be lying, he can't possibly be attracted to her, she's kind of missing the point, and she's kind of buying into, Cindy, the society's view that that's what it is about for men. Really, I would start to change your way you're thinking about that. Change the way you're thinking about your husband wanting to make love to you, and saying words like that. My husband wants to make love to me. Aren't I? In fact, our theme today of choosing what you pay attention to, rather than, oh my God, look at me, I'm this many pounds overweight. Saying to yourself, aren't I lucky that I have a husband that wants to make love to me? Rather than saying to yourself, oh, I'm older and this doesn't stand up as straight as it used to. Saying to yourself, you know, isn't it amazing that I have a man who wants to be faithful and to be with me and to connect with me? So really kind of, changing the way that you're framing those statements in your head. And then, and again, I don't have you on the phone, so I guess I'll have to be a little bit harsh. I will also say that I explain to women that our sexuality is our responsibility. It's not up to our men to make us necessarily feel sexy, though it's great for them to make, you know, tell us we're beautiful and sexy and wonderful. If you're not feeling it on the inside, that's kind of up to you. And it is our responsibility to our marriage to really make sure we kind of keep ourselves in that zone, whatever that might be, whether that's a certain outfit or a certain weight or a certain, you know, of course we can't control our age, but getting to a place where we feel good about ourselves, where we feel confident, and that means, you know, dressing maybe not, you know, in ways that make us feel like, you know, I'm a mom, so I'm saying this complete, but make us feel, I say in quotation marks, moms, and make us feel like women, or taking care of our hair or our weight or finding out if there's something possibly medically going on hormonally with us. You know, oftentimes women who reach menopause, their sex drive can drop quite a bit. And we sort of often write that off as, well, it's just we've been married this long, when in actuality our hormone levels are off. And those sorts of things are our responsibility to find out. So, again, my answer to your question is, give your husband some credit. He really does want to make love to the woman he loves. And, B, if you're not feeling it, if you're not in a sexy place and feeling that way about yourself, I would do some soul searching to figure out what makes you sexy. For some people, it's music. For some people, it's clothes. For some people, it's being in a certain state of health or you know, something like that. So and for some people, it's chemical, and there's something medically going on. So I would look into all of those things and really get yourself in a place where you're feeling good about you, and then being grateful that your husband wants to make love. That's what I suggest.
And I wanted to throw in a quick tip that works for me. I really like the steamy romance novels. So, kind of gets me going anyway.
There you go. So in other words, whatever it is that gets you going and gets you in that place and gets you in that mood and taking responsibility for that and not kind of putting that on him. So that's a good tip.
All right. So thank you very much, Dana. And we've got another question here just to remind you, if you feel free to raise your hand with *2. Ask a question on the webcast forum or email us at support@strongmarriagenow.com. Our next question is on the webcast. It's from Pam. It says, I've been with my husband for 29 years, and basically he's had untreated bipolar manic depressive highs and lows the entire time.
Wow.
The whole family is recommending an intervention to tell him he needs treatment, but he won't listen to me, or because he won't listen to me. We are in our early 60s, and it only gets worse. I don't want to spend my retirement managing his craziness. Is the intervention a good idea?
Absolutely, with a professional. You know, so often, I'm all about a product that we talk about helping your marriage and figuring that out, and that you need to learn skills. This particular event that you're discussing, there are people that are qualified to do that. They know how to do that. They know all of the places that work best, all of the ways to approach. They know how to coach the families. They know an intervention, yes, an intervention can very much backfire if people go into it just sort of, you know, surrounding the person and saying this is what we need. We think you should do, that can go very wrong. And one of the things about interventions is they don't tend to work several times in a row. I'm not saying that it has to only be one time and that's your only shot, but in general, your first time is kind of your best bet. I would really educate yourself. I recognize that it's overwhelming, and you had dealt with it for this long. And by the way, kudos for you for being married that long. That is so difficult, and I'm very impressed that you've stuck it out this long and that you're still trying to stick it out. You're still, despite what's going on and how hard it is for you to deal with someone else's mental illness, you are trying to still find a way to stay married and keep your family intact. So I'm very, very impressed by that. Let me say that. So that being said, finding out and finding someone who could do that with you. And then secondly, you want to make sure that you don't include anybody in the intervention who isn't in full support of this. Wishy-washy people that will be swayed or go the other direction or in the middle of the intervention go, well, you know, I mean, he's not that bad. You don't want those people involved. So it must be someone who's – you want to get your group of people together who are really behind you and behind helping your husband and really understand kind of what's going on and how serious it is. You know, bipolar disorder, it really can wreak havoc on someone's lives, and if they don't, and again, untreated bipolar at that, you know, the highs and the lows and how that makes somebody feel and the way they react, and with men, that's often expressed in aggression and anger. And so really kind of educating yourself about that and getting a professional behind you, I think it's a great idea. And then also making sure we have the plan all the way through too. So once we have the intervention, then what? Do we have, is he going to go into treatment? Do we have the therapist set up? Do we have the psychiatrist set up? Like, do we have everything set up so that we don't now go, okay, we agree for treatment, and then we have to scramble around for a month or two trying to find someplace. So making sure everything is kind of set up and in line, and then having, you know, somebody come in and help you. And they actually go with you to the house and participate in that intervention. So I would recommend that. So there you go.
Okay. Thanks, Dana. We've got another question from the webcast. This is from Trip. My wife had an affair, and it ended a year ago. We were in a house separated, now physically separated, for 6 months. She does not mention divorce, but says she would rather not be married. Says it's all her, not me, but she will not face her problems. She's turned to drinking. Mm. She has marked signs of depression. I'm about to go through the tough love route. I have the Strong Marriage Now system. Any input would be great, and I can vouch for the other husband and the wife who doesn't feel sexy. Although my wife was sexy, and she is anyway, although my wife always thought my wife sexy, and she in her eyes is average. Thank you. Sorry if I misread that.
No, that's great. Well, thank you so much for standing behind my earlier points. I appreciate you making my point for that. And I, again, I'm so sorry that you're going through what you're going through. I'm glad that you have the Strong Marriage Now system. I'm finding, gosh, Amy, I'm finding so much here. We kind of made a commitment that we don't want to talk about our products or sell our products while we're on this call. We really want this call to be about helping you guys and offering information, as much as we can. That being said, more so than the Strong Marriage Now system, your wife needs to see the checked out partner. I don't know, again, the best way to go about that, and perhaps Amy can talk to you about that on the other end of this call. But I would really get to a place, it sounds like that she just needs to get some information about being able to fall back in love again, being able to have the marriage that she wants, being able to get to a place where she's happy, all of those things. And most people don't realize, again, I've said this before, that it's normal to fall in and out of love in a long-term marriage. Chances are, and I hate to be, to sound harsh, chances are your wife is not in love with you right now, but that's normal. People who are married for a long period of time aren't in love the entire time. They really aren't. But you can fall back in love. And if people don't realize that, then they think when they're in that not in love phase that that's the time to get out. And it really isn't. You can fall back in love. You can actually have a better relationship than you had before. So that would be my advice to you somehow, is to get that information to her. If she won't listen to you, whether it's to listen to another professional, again, whether it's to listen to me, however you want to do that. Secondly, you mentioned briefly that there possibly is an addiction problem. That makes things far more complicated. An addiction will protect itself. And if being married to you is interfering with the addiction, then you've got a whole nother opponent that you don't realize that you're fighting. And again, I would argue that requires, and dealing with addiction issues requires, some sort of assistance and education on your part. It doesn't in any way mean that the marriage is over. It doesn't mean that the marriage is not savable, or that your wife can't even, stop drinking, or at least cut back, depending on what she needs to do. I would recommend some education about that. It's a whole different ball of wax. It's a whole different, a marriage dealing with addiction problems is a different entity altogether. In fact, Amy and I have talked about doing videos about that specifically in the future. So whether that's through Al-Anon, you've probably heard of that organization, whether that's through, again, just education online, finding that out yourself, finding out how addiction affects a marriage is going to be critical for you in helping you guys kind of get over those steps. And then also, again, to the best of your ability, getting that information to her. Depression, I'm not sure if you know very much about depression, and I don't have you on the phone, so I can't ask, but depression makes one feel like everything is bad, everything is wrong, everything hurts, nothing is good enough, nothing makes you happy. And imagine if you're depressed, what that does to a marriage. No partner could make you feel good. No partner will make you happy. No marriage will make you satisfied. So consequently, you would conclude, maybe I need a divorce, when in actuality it could be just a mood disorder. So, again, getting that information to her, I know it's difficult, I'm telling you all these things, or getting somebody else to get it to her, or finding a way that you can get some education about that to help. So there you go. I would say those two things, reminding your wife that it's normal to fall in and out of love, and she can, and then you getting some real good information about addiction stuff would be my best advice.
Okay, thanks, Dana. We've got another... We've got a couple minutes left for the call, but I think I'm guessing that since a lot of you are hanging out on the call, you'd like to have a couple more questions answered and go over a little bit. So we're going to try and over-deliver for you guys today and answer a few more questions. And if you need to drop off the call, we totally understand. We just want to handle a couple more questions from you guys. And if you are still hanging on there, you want to personally ask your question, just press *2 to ask your question, or you can do like Susie, Pam, and Tripp and the others and ask it via the webcast or via the email support@strongmarriagenow.com. So we've got another webcast question, and this one's from Brian. And Brian asked, I feel my wife slipping away. She has separated from me, and I feel crushed. I've tried really hard to show her love, but it just seems to push her away. She appears checked out. Nothing seems to work. I don't want her to give up. Please help.
Well, in that question, I'm going to assume, and I apologize if I get it wrong, I'm going to assume you mean she's pulling away from you, not necessarily physically at this point, but that she's sort of pulling away from you emotionally, that you're feeling disconnected. Let's see. The way I want to answer that, interestingly enough, is to bring another really famous
author's work into this. Many of you have probably heard of this book or read this book. It's called The Love Languages. And the author, Amy, if you recall, is...
We'll think about it.
It's Gary Chapman.
Oh, thank you. Gary Chapman, yes. And in that book, he kind of explains basically that we all have a different way that we feel loved. You know, for some people it's acts of service. For some people, that means doing things for us. For some people, it's words. For some people, it's physical touch. And I believe there's gifts and one more that I'm not recalling. But the point is that I'm wondering if your wife is feeling loved in the way that she would feel loved. The classic example of this is a woman who complains that her husband doesn't love her, and he looks at her and says, I don't understand, I work hard all day, I do this for you, I do that for you, I do this for you, and she says, you know, you never tell me you love me, and so therefore I don't feel loved. His way of expressing love is acts of service. Her way of feeling loved is through words and expression, and so they're missing each other. So it sounds to me like you guys are missing each other, and I would recommend kind of going, if she would agree to sit down, going through the exercise that I explained to the earlier caller when she was trying to get her husband to participate in the holidays, and really getting her to explain what would make her feel loved, what would make her feel like she was connected to you, what would make her, why isn't she getting it, why isn't that translating, and asking her what is it that she needs. Again, maybe you've done this. I don't have you on the phone. It's possible that you've done this, but oftentimes when we do this, again, as I explained to the other caller, we do it to a place where we, you know, she might say, well, I just wish that you would spend more time with me. And then usually what the person says is, but I do spend time. I mean, I try, you know, and they engage in an argument, which shuts the other person down. So I would, again, based on the listening exercise that we teach in the system, I would stay quiet other than to ask your questions and listen and remain open and find out, what is it? Why isn't she feeling connected? Why isn't she feeling loved? Where's the disconnect? And getting to a place, you know, and maybe arriving at a place where you can kind of express it and show her in a way that she would feel. You know, the other point, too, is that we get to a place where we get kind of frustrated, and so we're sort of expressing, I want to say love, but we're expressing love with an edge to it is my best way to explain that. We're expressing love like, you know, damn it, I'm loving you, and, you know, we're sort of shaking, and it doesn't get heard that way. It doesn't get felt that way. It's not coming from a sincere place where we really kind of feel like we can express that, and the other person is really hearing that. So I would also take a look at yourself and see if you really kind of are expressing that sincerely, or if that's coming from, after this long trying, a place of frustration and a tone of voice perhaps that is just not quite translating in the way that you're intending it. So that would be my advice.
Excellent. Thanks, Dana. We got another question here from Morgan. This person asks, is 6.5 years into a relationship too early to start having problems?
Oh, good heavens, no. I mean, again, I don't mean to minimize the problems that you're going through. No, in fact, there are three main places that people end up having experiencing problems. It's actually after 2 years of marriage, after 6.7 or, you know, 6 or 7 years, hence the seven-year itch. And the good news is after that, it's usually at around the 25-year mark. So if you can get through those two tough times. No, interestingly enough, there are specific times in a marriage that things become tougher, that has to do with the normal cycle that I mentioned earlier about falling in and out of love. It has to do with usually what's going on in people's lives by that point, children showing up, new jobs, careers, you know, aspirations, those sorts of things are going on. And it has to do with that initial glow has worn off, as sad as that is. I tell people all the time that, you know, after about 2 years, that crazy, amazing, and love feeling goes away, and simply because it's not new. And so we struggle usually after that for a while, those two or three, you know, for 3 or 4 years after that. And if we can't get to a place of peace and comfort and satisfaction with not having that crazy rush, things can really start to break down to around that time. So don't lose heart, however. That is not in any way a sign that your marriage should end or is even in serious trouble. Problems in a relationship can make, when they're overcome and dealt with, actually make the relationship stronger. So back to Amy's original statement about, you know, how is this perfect for me? And again, I don't want to minimize what you're going through in the pain of relationship problems, but you can ask yourself, how is this perfect for us? What can we do with this, with these problems and fix them and make ourselves stronger and better and, you know, all those things on the other side? I would recommend, as always, learning how to do that. Again, whether that's from me or from a therapist or from a book or your however you learn that, I would learn the skills. Many people say they want their marriage to get better. They promise that they'll get better. They'll work on this or that, but they never learn how. And then that's when things tend to fall apart even further, because now we've got a bunch of promises that weren't met and a bunch of hope that was dashed. So I would recommend that, you know, if there's problems going on, seek help, really. Learn what's going on, figure out the skills, figure out what you need to do. And then with that, you really can make a better, stronger relationship on the other side.
Awesome. Thanks, Dana.
Sure.
I think we've got time for maybe one more question. I know there's a few of you that have been listening in the whole time that have not asked a question. So if you do want to ask a question, press *2. And if, you know, we still are going to take one for the webcast, we've got a couple more minutes that we'll stay on the line. If you do want to ask, please take this time. And I'm going to introduce this one here. Lori asks in the webcast, how do you know when it's time to get married?
Oh, to get married.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, I would say that you sit down and talk about all the things that we so often are talking about. You talk about communication, and you talk about sex, and you talk about money, and you talk about kids, and you talk about faith, and you talk about all the things that you need to know about each other and whether you feel like you're compatible. Unfortunately, and this is one of the things I tell people, love is not enough. Love is very important. Love is, if we can go with the cheesy analogy, the heart in the body. It's the it's vital in the relationship, but it's not enough. There's all these other parts that you need in order to be happily and successfully married, and those have to do with the things that we talked about. How do you fight? How do you communicate? How do you listen to each other? How do you... again, what are your views on the future? What do you want out of life? How do you handle money? All of those questions are really the foundation of of what is going to make a long-term happy relationship. As, you know, the many people maybe who are on this call will attest, those are the things that tend to get in the way of the relationship. Those are the things that tend to be the problems. I would harbor to guess the last call with the is 6.5 years too early to have relationship problems. I bet money that, you know, one of those things is one of the things that's coming up for them. So the answer to your question is you need to have some conversations. You need to have some open, honest conversations and see if you guys are on the same page and if you have all the rest of the parts, or I wouldn't even say all of them, a lot of the other rest of the parts, nobody's perfect, that you would need to be successful and happy in a marriage, and then you would know.
And one thing I wanted to weigh in and suggest is we do have the quiz that we recently launched, and you can get there from the homepage. It's our marriage success quiz, so you can figure out how strong your marriage is.
Oh, yeah, and
it's
free.
Give you, yeah, it's totally free. And you answer, I think it's around 40 questions, and it'll give you a grade for your marriage, and it'll also tell you how you're doing on the 7 essential marriage success skills, so you'll get an idea of how strong your relationship is and whether or not it's one that has a strong likelihood of making it for the long term. So, and we're about 8 minutes over, but we got one last question that we will take today, and that's from Tom. It says, my wife had an affair. She says it's over, but she still says she won't fully cut off contact from the guy because she runs into him on occasion, and if that happens and I find out, I'll get upset. How do I get her to drop this guy, or do I give up?
Well, absolutely not. You do not give up. I'm hoping you don't mean give up on your marriage. The answer is no. Again, in the steps, the 7 steps to survive an affair article that we have, you can access on our blog in our website. The first point is actually to end any and all contact. Now, contact does not mean running into somebody. Your wife can do absolutely nothing about the fact that she may see somebody at a grocery store. Contact is, but you know, I see people in grocery stores all the time. I turn around and walk away. I see people I don't want to talk to. I see people that, you know, I mean, so she can run into somebody without having any contact with them. So that's really the point that you want to get across. You want to make sure that there's no contact, and that that's not going to come up again. And so, again, running into somebody doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have any kind of relationship. And your wife needs to understand that for the relationship, for your marriage to heal, that has to happen. There is a point where you will achieve trust again in this process. There is a point where your marriage, in fact, can actually get better on the other side of an affair, and I talk about that all the time, can get stronger and happier. But the first step is that all contact has to end, and she needs to know that, because it's when you keep contact, the whole process can't even begin, because we're still dealing with the whole trust issue. We're still dealing with, is this happening or not happening? And we can't even move forward to understanding what happened, taking responsibility, forgiveness, moving past. We can't even get to the other steps until that first step. And honestly, when we stay in that first step for too long, it can make it very difficult to recover from. It can make it very difficult for the injured party to move forward and forgive. So we, you know, as soon as you guys have discovered that that's what was going on, we need to immediately cut off contact so that we can get past that and move on to the part where we strengthen the relationship. And again, you know, always reminding that person of the reasons to do that, of family and history and all the troubles that will happen, and that we don't ever really, we bring half of our problems in our marriage to the next relationship because we bring ourselves into that relationship. And, you know, all of those reasons why having an affair is a really bad idea, and that most relationships that started in an affair end, and all those other things. But I'm thrilled that she says that that's over, but really the no contact rule does absolutely apply. It's impossible for the other person. I've had people quit their jobs, move out of neighborhoods, move out of cities, for heaven's sakes, in order to make sure that relationship, you know, change their email address and their Facebook page, all of those things that it's required to make the injured party feel safe again, and so you guys can move forward in that process. So I would encourage her to, A, listen to this, or check out that article.
Excellent. So I think we're going to be wrapping up now, and I wanted to thank all of you for sticking with us through the extra time. We know there are a lot of you on the call, so if we didn't get to you today, we're sorry. We will soon be sending you an email where you can log into our private membership forum and ask questions of us and each other. So if you're getting this, if you joined us today as part of the free membership that we're giving out to folks as part of the story contest, or because you've been a valued client, we're going to be launching a private forum, so we'll be able to get some questions and answers from there. And if you like the forum and you found this call valuable and want to participate next month, we would encourage you to join this membership that we're launching and giving you guys a sample of. And as always, we really, really care what you guys think. So we'll be sending out a survey, and we'd love it if you could take a few moments and let us know what you liked about the call, what we can do better, and, you know, because we're always looking to improve. So thank you so much for sticking with us, and we hope you found this valuable.
And, hey, guys, I hope to talk to you next month if you need me. But if we don't get a chance, I also want to tell everybody happy holidays. Thanks
so much. Happy holidays, everybody. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.